Hello and welcome to another exciting, pulse-pounding, pulsating edition of SFP Now. And joining me, as always, is my good friend Raisa. How are you, Raisa?
I'm fine, thank you.
Okay, I'm feeling pretty good. In the interest of change, because we've been making a few changes on the scifipulse.net website of late, we decided that we're going to be less news-focused and more features-focused. So if you happen to be one of those listeners that also visits scifipulse.net, you're going to notice this change coming up over the next couple of weeks. We're basically going to be taking a less is more approach to things by concentrating mostly on features, reviews and stuff, and sort of like leaving the news to the bigger sites. In the interest of starting that off, I posted a Star Trek article earlier today, which I thought might be worth discussing. What do you think, Raisa?
Yes, very much.
Mm-hmm. Before we start, the idea behind the post was, you know, as someone like yourself who's a long-standing fan of the Star Trek verse and remembers right way, way back to the original series, because I kind of grew up with that, and I watched Next Generation as I was beginning to leave my teens. It came on when I was about 17 or 18. I just thought it was worth sort of like bringing some of these points up and sort of pointing out where, you know, what we don't want to see as well in terms, we don't want the J.J. Abrams approach to the TV series.
Oh, God, no. That only works in movie format, week to week, the alternate universe. It's just not character-driven enough.
But, you know, you could argue that they could make it character-driven enough, but by the same token, I'd like to see them stay in the Prime universe.
I would, too. There's still stuff they could do in the Prime universe. I mean, if they wanted to do something with classic Trek related, there's ample proof just going by the fan series out there that you could set stuff within the purview of the classic series and maintain a series for as long as you wanted.
True, but I'd want them to go forward. I'd want them to go forward from the from where Voyager sort of left off, as opposed to going back. And what I'd like to see, because, you know, if you look at it from point of view, from narrative standpoint, the United Federation of Planets has sort of like been preaching a utopian sort of society and trying to sort of maintain that. And they've just had this big war, you know, with the Dominion, and they've had incursions with the Borg, which have got to have cost them and affected their resources. So I'd like to see a series where the United Federation of Planets is kind of like on the verge of collapsing and needs saving. So in a way, it kind of goes back to the cowboy diplomacy days of Kirk's era. But instead of going back to do that, you're kind of going forward to do that.
Oh, cool. So you kind of get the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
That would work.
And that is more relevant to what's going on in the world today as well. Because,
yes,
you know, we have got economies that are supposedly collapsing, and we've got governments that are adopting, you know, austerity, you know, politics and stuff like that. So that's kind of what I'd like to see in a Star Trek show.
No, that would work. That would work. And put it in the character beat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also, you know, do what no other Star Trek show has done before, with the exception of the fan films, have a lesbian or bisexual or transgendered main character.
Yes.
You know,
that is amazing.
that is something that Star Trek should have done about 20 years ago. Never mind Enterprise. But that's where I'd like to see it go. What about you?
Yes, I would like to have the lesbian or gay character in there. They should have done it. They were going to do it, but there were some bizarro network politics that got in the way. It was weird.
Mm-hmm.
But that should have been groundbreaking, because that would have been really true to Roddenberry and right up his remit.
Yeah, I know they were going to do it back in the TNG era, but you know what I'm surprised didn't happen, and surprised they didn't sort of like do it in the DS9 era.
Yeah,
you know,
that would have
once the smoke cleared a bit.
Yeah.
Because you did have, although they used the symbiont as the excuse sort of thing, you did have that episode with Jadzia Dax and her lover from previous incarnation.
Yeah.
You know, that Susanna Thompson played. And you had that lesbian kiss. But unfortunately, that seemed to play more as titillating as opposed to, you know, it having any sort of real substance to it.
Mm.
You know, I think. And it's nothing to do with Susanna Thompson and Terry Farrell being kind of hot.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it's just the writing that's to blame. It was just because it was just a one-off in that series. It just comes across as more titillating.
Yeah.
As opposed to having any true substance. Is there anything else you'd like to see? Do you have any ideas of kind of stories you'd
like
to
see? Well, let's see. In terms of the stuff that you brought up, I'm all for let's see more of the galaxy. You have a whole section here about wanting to see more civilizations than just the Klingons and the Romulans and the Borg, which I was kind of getting bored with all three. One of the things I liked about Deep Space Nine in particular was that we got some more species out of that show than just the ones that we had come to terms with.
Yeah, we got the Jem'Hadar.
Yes.
And we also got the Dominion.
The Dominion and a Ferengi, which kind of grew on me. I didn't expect them to, but they did.
Yeah, but admittingly, the Ferengi first turned up in DS9, in Star Trek Next Generation. It's just DS9
right.
Kind of fleshed them out.
That's true,
Because they started in Next Generation, now more of a nuisance and kind of a little bit more comic relief. It was only when DS9 got hold of them and did Quark and that we got a sense of what the Ferengi were actually about.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, so it's kind of like in Voyager, I'd have liked to have seen more about the Phage.
Yes, uh-huh.
You know? The Jem'Hadar were kind of Klingon, not the Jem'Hadar, was it the, I can't remember the name of those Klingon clones.
Yeah.
They're kind of scavengers. But they seem to be, you know, more of a nuisance than anything else, and a bit one note, but the Phage seem to be more, you know, they could have done a lot more with the Phage.
Yeah, they could have.
You know?
Yeah.
So there's all sorts of scope out there, and all sorts of ideas that floating around. I just hope that somebody from the new Star Trek production somehow miraculously finds this episode.
What I would like actually is every series we've had a ship, but for the next series, what I would like is actually to cover some of the themes that you're talking about. I wouldn't mind if the ship that we saw the Star Trek universe through is a more civilian ship. Like, one of my favorite episodes, I've spoken about this before, one of my favorite episodes is The Conscience of the King.
Mm-hmm.
An episode where we meet ostensibly regular people, a traveling theater troupe. And I was thinking, what if in the original timeline, we encountered a theater troupe that wasn't spearheaded by insane people who were, you know, genocidal maniacs, but just actual regular folks who happened to run this theater troupe, and they travel around in this ship, and we see the Star Trek universe through them, and one or more of the members of the traveling theater troupe is used to be associated with Star with the Federation, but isn't anymore. You know, decommissioned or there was some sort of scandal or something, and they ended up on this theater troupe ship instead as a plan B.
I'm not sure about that. I mean, I'm not sure if that that'd be strong enough to carry a series on. You know, it'd probably be strong enough to do a couple of episodes on, but I think that sort of deviates too far away from the idea of you know, you could have a theatre troupe on the ship.
Yeah.
A bit like in Next Generation, you had the Barber Mott, you had the Ten Forward, and things like that. And you know, it did insinuate in Next Generation that you had music recycles. You know, one of the crew members could actually have a theatre troupe.
And that could work.
Maybe the theatre troupe could be based on the ship. And, you know, whenever the ship's in different sectors of space, to sort of like send these people out as goodwill ambassadors to show off, you know, the different culture that they're coming from.
Another option, though, would be to have it be a medical ship like Dr. Crusher had toward the end of the series after she'd been promoted.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Or even a science vessel.
Yes. Because that's originally what Voyager was supposed to be. So before they ended up on a little detour.
What you could do is you could have it sort of like the series is broken up into sort of like 3-episode arcs over one season. And you have sort of like different regular crew members for each of these arcs, and you kind of like you have a 3-episode arc about a medical ship, a 3-episode arc about what is more traditional Star Trek, and a 3-episode arc of sort of maybe a space station, and you kind of alternate between them over the course of each season.
That would work, and that would actually fit with the format of a lot of different shows now that do something, you know, things like American Horror Story does a lot of that. I don't watch that show, but I know that they do arcs. Every season is a different arc with a rotating cast. Some of the actors come back, but they play different roles.
Well, I'm kind of talking about having you know, several different arcs in the one season. So you basically, and you have the same regular cast each season. It's just that, you know, they kind of sort of like rotate between the different sort of like crews and things, as opposed to just having it focus on one crew, one starship, or one space station.
Yeah, that could work, especially as you're starting out, and then if the audience responds particularly to one arc more than the other, then they can think about expanding it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that could work.
I mean, you know, the thing is, what we've got to take into account now is, you know, there's not really a need to have physical sets anymore.
No.
You know, you can have sets made up of partly physical things and CGI around bits sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it probably wouldn't cost as much money to build entire sets and things.
No.
Okay, well, you know, I think this is a discussion that could actually go on forever.
Yes.
And I kind of want to move on to a little bit of news now. And
yes.
And this is news as such. This is more of a question. Next year, we have several new superhero films coming out. We've got Marvel versus DC. And basically, I'm going to pose a question that's being asked over on Hollywood Reporter and at other websites. Superhero versus superhero, what movie is going to triumph next year? You know, we've got Batman versus Superman. We've got Civil War. And we've got Deadpool. Which of these movies is going to get the most box office, do you think?
Based on my understanding of things up to now, it seems like Marvel is doing slightly better with the films than with TV, and DC is doing better with TV than they are the films.
I agree. I think the new Marvel film Civil War is probably going to get the most box office out of those three films next year. The one I think is going to do the least well is going to be Deadpool.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be more fun. Deadpool is the one I'm actually looking forward to. Mm-hmm. But not enough people actually know who the character is. I mean, but tone-wise, that's the one that I'm actually looking forward to of the films.
It's not just that not many people know who the character is. It's also the fact that it's got an R rating. It's got an 18 certificate, so it's got more adult content than the others.
Mm.
And that, as a rule, usually sort of like, you know, diminishes the audience.
Mm-hmm.
As for Superman versus Batman, I'm not even sure I want to go see that.
I may rent it. I want to see it, but I don't know if I...
As much as I like to see Gail Gadot in her Wonder Woman costume, and I'm curious to see her in action, it's not really going to convince me to buy a ticket.
No, I'm actually looking more forward to the Wonder Woman solo movie than I am to Batman versus Superman. I'll tell you, the DC movie I'm actually looking forward to is Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one I actually want to see.
And interestingly, that's not even mentioned.
No.
Which is kind of funny, really, because you think it would be. But I guess mm-hmm. it's kind of like the bastard child of DC movies.
Yeah.
So I think we're kind of in agreement here. I think it's probably going to be Civil War that gets the most. Second most will be Superman versus Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Or Batman versus Superman. And third will be Deadpool. But I think that if we put Suicide Squad into the equation, Suicide Squad could possibly nick it from Deadpool.
It could.
Because it's got more star power.
Mm-hmm. And because people want to see Leto as the Joker and see what he does.
Mm. And, you know, there's also, you know, you got the Will Smith factor there as well. I mean, his films recently haven't really been doing as well as they once did.
Yeah.
But, you know, this could well be, you know, it could be a return for him.
It could, although I have to say, as a fan, generally speaking, of the DC TV shows, I'm still kind of pissed that the Suicide Squad movie put the kibosh on the Suicide Squad on the Arrow TV show. Because the Suicide Squad appearances on the Arrow TV show are some of the best episodes they've done.
Mm-hmm. True. And, you know, especially the portrayal of a Deadshot on that show.
Yeah.
You know, the actor that played him was brilliant. And we also had a hint of the Joker's main squeeze.
Yes. they were originally going to use her to a larger extent, but then the movie end of DC kiboshed that, and they were and they replaced her with Cupid.
Mm-hmm. It sucks.
And they, yeah, and then and they made her a poor woman's Harley Quinn, and it was rather pathetic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think moving on from that, I know that you've got a bit of DC news that you're kind of anxious to get out there. So, go.
Yeah. The one big piece of DC news I wanted to bring up is the fact that Arrow has cast the actor Tom Amandes as the a villain called the Calculator. Now, he's referred to as a criminal mastermind and technical genius. His name is Noah Cutler, and he uses his advanced skills in computer science and internet manipulation to blackmail Roy out of retirement and to do his bidding, which leads to a battle with Team Arrow. Now, why this is important is because if you look up the Calculator in the DC, the official DC comics database, which is very handy for folks like me who don't read the comics, he is referred to as the direct foil of Oracle. And Oracle in this version of the Arrow's universe is very clearly Felicity. And they've been bringing up the fact that Felicity's dad is going to be coming in the mix this season. So mm-hmm. everybody with a couple of brain cells is going, this is probably Felicity's dad.
Yeah, I think what they need to do at the end of this season is Felicity needs to have a terrible accident and wind up in a wheelchair.
Wheelchair, yeah.
So she can actually give up to the whole Oracle thing. You know.
And in that same episode 412, apparently she will be getting a code name.
Damn it.
Yes.
What is it? Bicycle?
I don't know, but it's got an A in it, according to Guggenheim's Tumblr.
Mm-hmm. It's got an A in it. Best not go there because my imagination's doing cartwheels now. Moving on, very quick few pieces of news before we have the interview, because we're kind of beginning to run a little short on time. Ridley Scott has revealed that Alien Covenant is actually the first of three films before linking up with the original Alien, which kind of means that we're disregarding Prometheus as the first of a trilogy.
Ooh, okay.
Which is how I understand it. Saying it's a very complex story. It's an evolution of what I first did with Prometheus 1, he said, of the new film, which tells the story of the crew of the colony ship Covenant, who discover what they think is an uncharted paradise, but is actually a dark, dangerous world whose sole inhabitant is the synthetic David, Michael Fassbender, the sole survivor of the doomed Prometheus expedition. Prometheus 1 was born out of my frustration that on Alien 1 in 1979, I only did one, as I don't normally do sequels. I was amazed that in the three that followed, that no one asked the question, why the alien, who made it, and why? Very basic questions, so I came up with the notion of Prometheus 1, which starts to indicate who might have made it and where it came from, Scott said. So I'm now going to the next one, which is the next evolution directly connected with the first one, which was this Shaw when he replaced Michael Fassbender in two pieces, and we'll kind of pick it up there and it will evolve. When that's finished, there'll be another one and then another one, which will gradually drive into the back entrance of the film in 1979. So there we go.
Cool.
So I'm not sure what you think about that. I didn't like Prometheus. I found it kind of slow, trudgingly boring, and, you know, I preferred Alien.
I never even saw it.
I kind of think that the Alien films have become like the Terminator ones. You know?
Yeah, it's like, why?
once great, but why continue with the narrative? You know, leave some of it to our imaginations.
Yeah.
And the last bit of news before we run the interview, because we have fast running out of time, is Star Wars The Force Awakens officially gets PG-13 rating. Now, obviously, this is kind of not a non-news item, but it basically says here, blame the sci-fi action and violence. And, you know, I think this is basically akin to the original Star Wars movie was a U.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, for its day, for a U movie, that, you know, that did have its fair share of action and violence sort of thing. But the definition of action and violence has changed a lot over the last 40 years. You know, as to what is acceptable and what is not, and sort of the ratings and how they do them. So there's that. But the other thing is, you notice a total shift when you came to Empire Strikes Back. They made that PG in this country. So PG-13...
Yeah.
Sounds about right. It's actually got me more curious as to you know where this film's going to be going.
Yeah, especially when you consider that it's a new trilogy. So if the first chapter is a PG-13, are they going to work up past that or keep it PG-13 to keep the broader audience?
And I think on that note, it's probably best we go to the interview.
Yes.
So thanks, Reese, for joining us. Now it's time for our interview with Robin Dunn, who's formerly of Sanctuary. He talks about a couple of his new movies and the comic book Rattletrap, which has just met its funding goal on Kickstarter. So away we go. Welcome Robin Dunn back to the show. Robin, of course, is best known for Sanctuary and a lot of other things besides. Hi, Robin. It's nice to have you back. How you doing?
Yeah, it's lovely to be here, Ian. I was trying to remember, how long has it been since we've talked?
I think it's probably about 3 years. It was I think you just you were filming the third series, I think.
Wow.
You know,
yeah.
So it's quite a while ago.
Back when we were both young and innocent.
I don't know about me there, because I was still in my 40s back then, so you know. I've got a few questions for you, and I guess I'd kind of like to start a little bit where we left off, because you've been quite busy since you wrapped on Sanctuary back in 2011. So I'm just wondering, were you happy with how the series closed out because it seemed like your character, you know, had pretty much gone underground?
Yeah, I love the show, and I love working on it. So I wasn't happy the show came to an end. I would have worked on Sanctuary forever because I loved it so much, and I think all of us who worked on it felt the same way. I think, however, the way it came to an end was good in a sense that Damien Kindler and the creative team, the writing team behind the show, I don't know if I can't remember if there was an inkling of maybe the show was coming to an end, or they were just taking the show into a different direction and closing out the first part of the series. But regardless of whatever the reason was, the show ended organically. So when the series we did find out that we weren't coming back for a fifth season, at least there was closure there. I think the series had a nice ending, and then all the characters got to sort of have some closure and finish it off. And I think one of the most frustrating things for fans is when a show gets canceled, sometimes it comes out of nowhere and you kind of just leave all these loose ends waving in the wind, and you don't know what happens to the characters and all that kind of stuff. And I think we were fortunate on Sanctuary to be able to have it come to an end and see these characters off into the next phase of their lives or whatever they may be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think it did end a little bit funny for your character, though, because your character went underground. I'm just sort of like wondering, what do you think he'd be doing now? Do you think he'd be sort of like going between the underground and this earth?
You know, it's funny you asked that. I did have a thought about good old Will, and you know, I think it's possible. You know, there's two avenues that he could have gone. It's possible right now Will is living happily. He's a psychiatrist somewhere, and he and Abby are happily settled down and married and maybe have a kid or two, and he just has put that whole Sanctuary chapter of his life behind him. Or, and I think maybe this is a more interesting path idea, but I think it's possible that Will, having seen all the things that he saw and with all the things that he was exposed to, just could not handle real life and normal life anymore, and not unlike a soldier who comes back from war and can't seem to fit into normal society. I think it's possible that maybe Will just kind of cut himself off and is living, you know, a rogue somewhere, doing his own Sanctuary underground work. You know,
yeah, that,
like living in the mountains, got a big beard. You know, mm-hmm. Kind of like Rambo. I don't know.
Yeah.
maybe the fans can weigh in on which avenue they like for Will.
Cool. Maybe living in the side of an active volcano with a white cat.
Yeah. No, I like that too. That's great. All of that is good. Ripped muscles. You know, from working out and living in the bush, and you know. Mm-hmm.
You know, big scar down the middle of the left eye.
Big, you know, his only weapon is just a big jagged knife that he uses. Takes, you know.
Yeah, that might work.
You know, maybe the beginning of the Will series, you can see him like he's like tackling down a bear just mm-hmm. you know, for his food. I don't know.
Maybe you could call it When I'm Not.
Yeah, oh, that's great. Yeah. God, Ian, we got to get writing, man. We got to sit down and start writing the show.
Oh man, I'm terrible at writing. That's why I do what I do. Well, since show wrapped, you've done a number of roles, including the part of Drew in an episode of the Catherine Bell movies, the Good Witch movies. I think you did Good Witch's Destiny. How did you get involved in that, and how did you find working with that group of actors? Because you know, we get those movies here too, and I quite enjoy them. They're quite fun.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of just looking for different stuff after Sanctuary, and that came along. Great series of movies, and obviously now a TV series as well. And it was just a different kind of character, and also a different genre of movie, obviously, than something like Sanctuary. So it was a lot of fun, and working with Catherine Bell, she's a lovely, lovely actress, and a lot of fun. And you know, those kind of heartfelt movies, they really travel well. They people see them all over the world, and it's fun to be part of them. I've done a couple Christmas movies as well, and it's the same kind of feeling. You know, good heartwarming entertainment for people, and you know, also my mom loves them. So if I can, you know, I think my mom didn't like Sanctuary. She said it was too scary. She liked it, but she said it was too scary for her. So if every now and then I can do get a project that mom likes too, that works.
Yeah, I kind of watched those because Catherine Bell. I've kind of followed her since Jag when she was on Jag.
Yeah, she's so lovely. Unfortunately for her, she's just so unattractive. It must be difficult for her. Not a mental. No, I'm kidding. She's a gorgeous woman, but also lovely as well. And so that's always a nice combination.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that certainly comes across as well. You know, I've actually spoke to a few other people that I've actually worked with, and they all say the same thing, that she's really good to work with.
Oh, yeah. No, really lovely. Lovely. Mm-hmm.
Another show you was involved with was the sci-fi channel series Defiance,
yeah.
And in that you played Miko, or is it Miko? He was a rather nasty piece of work. That kind of saw you having to wear prosthetic makeup a little bit. And he was also a villain in that. What was that like for you? Was that more fun for you as an actor, doing a villain?
The thing about Defiance was I came onto the show, I think it was the first season. And they had a character that I was going to play, but it didn't really, story-wise, he didn't really pan out, and he ended up only just being in one episode, and it was fine. It was a lot of fun. But Kevin Murphy, the showrunner, I think he was like, he wanted to find something more for me. So in the second season, they brought me back as a different character, a guy named Kai. And I think because I'd already been on the show as a different character, they wanted to make sure I looked really, really different. So they made Kai an Arathian. So he was an Arathian. And therefore, I was going through a lot of prosthetic makeup every day just to make myself look really different. And I'll tell you, that show was such a blast to work on. And what a great, wonderful group of people. Stephanie Leonidas and I had most of our stuff to do together. A London girl, lovely London girl. Mm-hmm. Grant Bowler, fantastic fella. It was one of these jobs where, and I've said this before about other gigs, when you come onto a show as an actor, on a show that's already been running and everybody's been working together for some time, and there's a tendency to feel like you're the new kid in school. And, sometimes you don't feel like you really belong. It takes a while to belong. But there are certain sets, and Defiance is certainly one of them, where the moment you arrive on set, you're so welcomed by everybody that you felt like you were there since the beginning. And that's how my experience on Defiance. Just a lovely group of people. Can't say enough about Grant Bowler, a lovely guy. And a great leader. And Amanda Tapping is the same kind of actor.
Mm-hmm.
There's a specific thing about the person who's number one on the call sheet. Not only, there's a lot of responsibility there. Number one is, not only do you have to, you're the lead of the show, so you're carrying the show. But you're also, you've got the captain's armband on, and you set the tone for how the show is going to be and the feeling of what the set is going to be like. And, we obviously, Amanda Tapping she's a consummate leader, makes everybody feel comfortable, very generous, never looks at it as her show, always looks at it as an ensemble piece. And that really goes a long way. And just going from Sanctuary and then getting on to Defiance and seeing Grant being that same kind of guy, that same, very team player, wants to make sure everybody's comfortable and feels good and feels part of the team. It's a really special thing. And, I hope that actors learn from people like that, because that's the way to be in this business.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really sort of like make a comedy TV show or film if you're being a nasty prick all the time, you know.
Well, that's true, and there is something too about, and I've said this before about Sanctuary. There's something intangible that I don't think necessarily the viewer, the audience, knows exactly, can pinpoint what it is. But when you have a group of people working together on a show, and everybody likes each other, and everybody loves being there, and everybody really, really appreciates what they're doing on this particular show, that comes through for the audience. And there's something intangible that translates to the viewer, and certainly that's set by the higher ups, the producers of the show, and the star.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Defiance ended this year. It's another show that came to an end. But I think, like Sanctuary, I have a feeling that they knew they were that this was going to be the last series, in a sense, because the last episode, it actually felt like a finale to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think again, they and maybe Kevin Murphy had a sixth sense about it or whatever, but I feel like, and again, it's disappointing for fans of a show when it ends, but at least there's some satisfying wrap up there, where it's not just, going on hiatus and hoping to come back next season, and then you find out the show ends, and then we don't know what happened to these characters. So yeah, I think I was sorry to see Defiance go. Not really being part of the show anymore, but just because I have such a great feeling for all those people in that gang making it. But yeah, at least they got that same kind of closure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's another show that I really enjoyed is Defiance. I never got to play the video game because I didn't have the right console. But
yeah, I never played the video game either. And I, you know, I'm one of these kind of dolts that I'm kind of behind the times in certain respects when it comes to things like video games and stuff. So I didn't even know there was a video game of the series. Until I was corrected about on the set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was actually a very ambitious project, sci-fi. They actually launched it with a video game during its first series, and the video game kind of tied into the plot of the series and vice versa a little bit.
So, yeah, they launched them both together, right?
Yeah, it was a pretty cool idea, but I think the series kind of like moved much more beyond the video game, unfortunately. But you know, there's still people playing that game.
Yeah.
Another project you've been working on, it's actually due out soon. It's one that you've written and acted in. It's called Archie, which sounds rather cute.
Yeah.
About a robotic dog. How did that idea come about?
Well, you know, I've been a writer for quite some time, and I've been lucky to be able to diversify myself in the business, and so when I'm not acting, I'm writing and creating projects. So my good pal and producer Shane Putzlocker, we were talking a couple years ago, and he was looking to start producing some family movies. And we were kind of brainstorming on ideas, and I said, you know, I think in the talking dog genre of film, we haven't really seen a robot dog, like Robo Dog, basically is what we originally were calling it. And he said, well, great. And so I went off and wrote it, and it came together quite nicely. And I was fortunate enough to be able to direct the movie as well. And yeah, it's about a girl who's her parents have passed away. She comes to a small town to live with her uncle, and she feels alone and kind of out of sorts and a fish out of water, and she finds this stray dog, and this stray dog can do all these amazing things like talk and move at blinding speed and has x-ray vision and all kinds of stuff. And she finds out that he's actually a robot. He's been created in a lab. So she takes him in and says, look, you know, you can't let anybody know that you can do all these amazing things, because if people find out, then they're gonna take you away. But of course, Archie, being the cheeky bugger that he is, he can't kind of keep his amazing talents to himself, and people start finding out, and bad guys come looking for him, and we're just actually in finishing the final little pieces of post production within the next week, and it'll be completely completed. If that's a saying, but it was a blast to make that film, and to see something from script stage all the way through was really quite a treat for me. And we cast Michael J. Fox as the voice of Archie, which was just such an amazing experience. We went to New York to record with Michael, and you know, I'm appreciative of actors and stars and icons, but I don't get starstruck really. But I will tell you, when Michael J. Fox walks into the room and you're just kind of hanging out and talking to Marty McFly, it's quite a treat, quite an experience. What such a lovely man. You know, he could have come in and just been like, look, this is a little gig, you know, just tell me what to do and kind of get me in and out. But Michael was really, really invested in it. We sat and talked about the script before we recorded, and he had ideas and thoughts, and he was really quite invested in the piece, and that was a blast. It was a great day hanging out with him, and now, you know, you make this movie, and the actors in the movie were all very wonderful. Are acting to this dog, but of course he's not speaking because real dogs don't talk. I don't want to burst your bubble there, Ian, but they don't.
Oh, damn, I'm gutted now.
Sorry, man, I crushed you, I know.
So disappointed.
but then when you see it come together and then you see the cut and it's Michael J. Fox in there, it's fantastic. So yeah, I'm really excited to, that'll be coming out at the beginning of the year. and it was a real blast.
Is it for TV or is it actually for theaters?
It'll go theatrical a little bit, and then it'll be, you know, on every place you could find movies, Netflix, you know, all the normal outlets, and then it'll eventually go to TV as well.
Yeah, because I still want to see that film, because, you know, there's a funny bit in the trailer where he's at the vet.
Oh yeah. You know, he gets the kind of the rectal exam, and the vet gets electrocuted. Yeah, mm-hmm. I couldn't help putting some of my humor into the script, and that's definitely a scene. And then there's also something that I think if you like that piece, there's also a sequence which we're calling Fartgate. Where you know, there's a diner in the movie, and maybe some chili gets spiked with farting powder, and I'll leave it with like at that, but I think you'll quite enjoy it.
Mm. Well, you know, I just think it's great you've got Michael J. Fox on board, like you say. I mean, I've seen lots of interviews with him over the years, and you know, he just seems a really nice, down to earth kind of bloke. You know, he's
lovely, and you know, a real artist too. We really, he was, I guess, you know, being the director, I mean, he may have sensed my trepidation to giving him direction. I mean, he's Michael J. Fox, but he was really encouraged. Like, hey, no, tell me what you want to do, and let's make sure we get it right. And he was really gracious. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And another film that you've written, and you're also, I think you're starring in, you've directed as well, is Adventure Club.
The Adventure Club, yeah. I didn't actually direct it. A fellow named Jeff Anderson, a pal of mine, he directed it. But I did write the movie, and I was acting in it as well. And that's another really fun movie. It's about these kids who find this thing called the Wish Box. That grants a magical wish box. It grants wishes. So they're kind of, they don't know what to do with it. They're like, what do we use our wishes for? And then of course some bad guys, like these archaeologists, evil archaeologists, are coming looking for it, and they have to kind of escape these guys and keep their wish box and be able to use it for something that they need and to save their local science center. A lot of fun. It was kind of a little bit paying homage to Goonies, mm-hmm. that kind of 80s movie, which of course is my genre, and I love those films. So it was great to work in that kind of film. And Billy Zane is the bad guy in it, and he's wacky and great and fantastic actor. Great to hang out with him. So yeah, it was after Archie, we went pretty much right into the Adventure Club. So it's been quite a busy few months for me.
Yep. And you've also got, at present, it's got about a week to go, you have Rattleshack.
Rattletrap, yeah.
Rattletrap, so, sorry.
Yeah, no, and so yeah, Rattletrap is you know, I had some time in the last year or so, and I've had this story in my head for a long time about this space adventure film about a universe, and their star that their universe exists around is dying, and so they have to go and find a star seedling to replenish their sun, basically. And these two young people venture off on this spaceship they make out of garbage. They live on a garbage planet, so they make this spaceship out of garbage, and they venture off into these treacherous galaxies looking for the star seedling to save their universe. It was just something that I've been thinking about for a long time, and you know, over the years, making more notes about it, and so finally, about a couple years ago now, I sat down and wrote the screenplay. And you know, I'm very happy with the screenplay. I think it's a great piece, but it is one of those things, given the economics of the business, which is something as an artist you always have to think about. It's a very expensive movie to make. It would be a big studio film. So then I was presented with the challenge of, well, how do I take this screenplay that I love and create a structure around it so that it has a chance to be made into a movie. And that's when I teamed up with this really cool comic book company called Underbelly Comics. And the fellow who runs the company, Adam Jack, he said, well, why don't we make a graphic novel out of your screenplay, and that gives it a little bit momentum, more momentum, and you know, creates a brand out of this piece. So we've put it up on Kickstarter. We're almost two thirds of the way there. We got a week to go. So, you know, we still have some ground to make up, but I'm confident we're going to get there. And one of the reasons why I wanted to do this is that, you know, we live in a world that we just spoke about Defiance and how that's based off of a video game. And so many of the movies and television shows that we see these days are based in pre-awareness. They're existing mm-hmm. titles, they're sequels or prequels. And not, I mean, and I love that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm going to be right there in line to watch the new Star Wars coming out. But it's hard for new things to break in, and you know, you really got to find a way to put your product out there on the map. And I think we do need new stuff. We need new stories. As much as we love the stuff, the sequels and stuff that's been around, and appreciate those things. We also need to grow and have new stories being told. So I'm committed to that, and we'll get this first graphic novel of Rattletrap off the ground. And also, I'm really excited about the idea of the graphic novel avenue, because, you know, there are other properties out there that can be continued in a graphic novel form. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I appreciate all the support that we've gotten, and we need some more. So anybody out there listening, go to Rattletrap at Kickstarter and check it out.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I've got quite a few friends in the UK comics industry. I kind of know what it's like. And it's also, you know, what you said about, you know, we need new stories. We do need new stories. But sad thing is, you know, big production companies and things like that, they're not really willing to take chances on new stories. It's sort of like, let's make another Star Wars movie, you know. We know it works, it's a formula, and we can make loads of money.
Yeah, and you know, I respect that. I mean, I understand that standpoint. I mean, studios are spending a lot of money on these things, so they want to make sure that it's as sure bet as possible. I mean, nothing's a sure bet, but at least they have something going for them, and so I understand that, where it's like, well, this was based on a book. This book sold really well, so that's a good thing. Or this is a sequel of a movie that did really well. You know, they're trying to hedge their bets. So it's our job as creators and as creative people is to develop new stuff, but also figure out ways to show potential investors or studios or production companies that, look, there is a desire for this out there. There is an audience. There's a fan base for these kinds of things. And given you know, the internet, social media, things like Kickstarter, these are all fantastic tools for us to be able to go out and prove that and say, hey, look, you know, people do want to see this thing, you know, as opposed to just having a screenplay that's much more of a shot in the dark.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know, you know, you're a huge science fiction and genre fan like myself, and you know, next month we have, as you've just already pointed out, we have Star Wars: The Force Awakens due out. Are you as excited as everyone else about it? And, you know, what parts of it are you kind of looking forward to?
Well, you know, Ian, it's funny. I found myself kind of staying away. I mean, obviously you can't stay. It's ubiquitous. There's no staying away from it. But I found myself not really delving into it too much. Of course, people send me, hey, this is the new trailer, and I've seen a few of the new things, and it looks fantastic. But there's a couple things going on with me, I think. Firstly, and I don't like bashing things, but you know, the last
prequel trilogy sucked.
The last set of prequels, I think I'm not being unkind to say we're disappointing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think maybe I know this is a new game, and J.J. Abrams, I love what he did with the Star Trek franchise. I mean, if there's anybody who could do it right, he's the guy. So I'm not really worried about it. But I think there's part of me that's like, I don't know. You know, I Star Wars, those first three Star Wars are pretty golden to me. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. They're almost untouchable, right? It would be like, I don't know, somebody trying to recreate the Beatles or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're going to be great, but I'm a little trepidatious. You know, I don't know about you, but I did this movie called Space Milkshake a few years ago. And what I with Amanda and Billy Boyd and some other people, You know, what I love about, and that was, we did kind of a throwback to the, paying homage to the 70s, those 70s sci-fi movies. What I love about the 70s sci-fi movies is yes, computer graphics have given us, are amazing and given us all these opportunities in the industry, but back in the 70s, they didn't have that kind of stuff. So they had to figure stuff out practically, you know. So like the beginning of, you know, Star Wars, where they're coming into the, you know, Darth Vader's coming into the ship. I mean, they're just like literally shaking the camera and stuff. And I love that kind of lo-fi sci-fi element mm-hmm. to those movies. And what I think was so disappointing, amongst many other things, but what I think was ultimately most disappointing for me in the newer three Star Wars, like, I can't remember, what are they, the middle three or
no, they're the first three, prequels.
They're the prequels, yeah, right, they're the prequels. But there was so much CGI, you know, that it kind of took away from it. And now even, they put CGI into the original three Star Wars that I can't see the Star Wars without that. And so I think there's an overuse of CGI in a lot of our sci-fi movies, all movies, but particularly sci-fi movies. And I'm just kind of going, I hope these new Star Wars movies don't go overboard with the CGI. CGI should be like a beautiful thing in the background that you don't really notice that enhances everything. But if it's too in your face, I don't know. But having said that, I think it's going to be great. I think what I may do is, I don't know if I'm going to get in line and see it on the first couple of days. It's going to be insane. I might try to hold out as long as possible, but I can't guarantee it's going to be too long. Or like maybe go to like a 10 a.m. screening on a Tuesday afternoon. It'd probably still be packed though.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to try and go see a matinee, you know, an afternoon, you know, because our theatre here in Altrincham, town where I live, it's usually so like on the matinee shows, regardless of how big the movie is, you don't really get that many people in.
Yeah.
You know, it's usually after, you know, after 4 o'clock when kids are getting out of school and everything, that's when it starts to really
go crazy. Yeah, yeah.
Another thing we've recently learned about is there's a new Star Trek series going into production at CBS. You got any plans on auditioning for that?
Hey, look, if they'll have me audition, I will definitely. Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think they've just wrapped on the third Star Trek movie, right?
Yeah, they have.
Yeah.
Star Trek Beyond. I'm still getting used to that title.
Yeah. No. I mean, I think like they did a great job. I know that people weren't blown away with the second Star Trek Into Darkness, but I really liked it. You know, and again, on the subject of CGI, I'm sure they used a ton of CGI in both those movies, but it was really kind of in the background. It wasn't really too in your face, which I quite liked. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And yeah, if they'll have invite me to an audition for that show, I will be there.
Okay. Well, you know, best of luck with Rattletrap and Archie. I'm hoping everything does well for you.
Yeah, and once it's all done and stuff, I'll send you some stuff on it. I think you'll really like it.
Cool. Well, thanks for being on the show again. You know, Robin, it's been great speaking to you. And hopefully we can have you on again in future.
Yeah, anytime. It's always a pleasure speaking to you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Bye.
And that's about it for this week, folks. I'd like to thank you all for listening. I'd also like to thank Raisa for coming on to do the news for us. And I'd also like to thank Robin Dunn for being so generous of his time to actually come and do this interview with us. You know, I had a lot of fun speaking to him the second time round. In fact, a little bit more fun speaking with him the second time round than did the first. So, you know, it was just great fun. Anyway, that's about it for this week. We'll see you again next week. Goodbye.